Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
This week's Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by Electrify America, and we're so happy to be partnering with Electrify America until the end of the year. With Electrify America, you can drive your EV from coast to coast with more than 650 charging stations nationwide and new locations opening every week. Electrify America is bringing EV drivers the freedom they need. Whether you want to plan a weekend getaway, maybe you're off to see some friends or relatives, maybe it's a coast-to-coast road trip, you can ask our Kyle about how that's done using Electrify America charging stations. Well, you can rely on Electrify America's ultra-fast chargers to get you back on the road faster. So, where will you go charging on Electrify America? Let us know in the comments below. We'd love to hear what your plans are for this weekend, and tell us where you'll go next. And you can learn more at electrifyamerica.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for September the 23rd, 2021. This is episode number 77. Our top stories today: Cadillac Lyriq sells out in 10 minutes. Frustration ensues. Mercedes EQS gets priced cheaper than the S-Class. And Audi Q4 e-tron and Sportback US prices revealed. And much, much more. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the astoundingly astute Tom Logney, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the most mannerly Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which, of course, is available on all the best podcast platforms. And, of course, Kyle Connor joins us from Out of Spec Studios. He also puts together stupendous videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel that have everything you'd want to see in a car video except Tom Hanks. All right. Before we get going, I'd like to ask you to please subscribe to the show. If you're watching on YouTube, please hit that thumbs up button and ring that bell icon for notifications. If you're watching on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications there. In case we do a surprise show in the middle of the week or something, that could happen. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome, everybody. So let's talk about what we've been driving. So if you remember last week, Tom here had a go in the revised Tesla Model S with the yoke and was not too impressed by that. The yoke, not the car. I think the car was impressive. Yes. So during that same trip, though, he rented a Model Y. So yeah, he rented that Model S that happened to... Let me spit this out. he rented the Model S from a guy who happened to have a Model Y there with full self-driving beta, and he got to check that out as well. So do you want to tell us a little bit about how that went, Tom? And you're joining us from a hotel room in Colorado, as is actually Kyle, and your Wi-Fi there isn't so great, so please bear with us.
I apologize if I'm a little happy up here. I did the best, getting the best signal I could. But last week on the show, we did talk about the fact that I had driven in a Model Y with full self-driving beta for about a 20-25 minute ride. And I hadn't yet put up the video yet. And so if he's now the full video, you can watch the entire recording of the whole driving experience. And I was impressed on one hand, because it really is kind of something that the vehicle is basically driving itself all over the place, you know, and making turns and putting its blinker on, changing lanes. I mean, that in itself, it's amazing that we've gotten to this point. However, it's clear that it's really far from being ready to really do a full release and let people rely on this, because it made a lot of mistakes. The driver had to take over a couple of times. It was stuck between two lanes at one point. A lot of the lane changes were really like abrupt and jerky, where it made that, but it did the turn. It wasn't smooth, kind of, you know, was a little unsettling watching the vehicle make such an abrupt. So, in my opinion, it's pretty far from really wide release. And I know there's online that show it doing really well, and then there's some people showing it making mistakes and so forth and so on. I'd like to get in the car with some of the videos that show like a half an hour drive where it doesn't make a single mistake, and just wondering if, you know, if they just have a better version, because what I experienced, it's pretty far from really allowing people to use it.
Right. Hey, Tom.
I think Tesla is trying to silence Tom's connection based off of this comment here.
Right. Hey, so they're everywhere.
I have a suggestion. Tom, can you maybe turn off your camera and see if we can just go with voice for you? Because maybe that'll help things out.
Yeah,
I mean,
second
seeing
button into the bottom left, second button, stop cam. We should be able to do that and just get Tom's voice. That's the theory anyway.
Okay.
All right. How do I sound now?
Good. Less bandwidth. We like it.
Okay. Sorry about that, guys. I hope, could you at least understand what I was saying in that last segment?
Yeah, just
some of it. So you got the Model Y from this guy that you rented the Model S from, it didn't really, its performance was not what you would expect for public consumption, right?
Pretty much. But like I said in the beginning, or at least I tried to say, I'm still pretty impressed with how well it does work. Things that it does do, it's amazing that the car really can, you know, you enter a destination and it'll take you there most of the time. Right. some of the maneuvers it couldn't handle, and they were not difficult maneuvers. We couldn't merge into a lane to make a left turn at one point. At another point, we were trying to make a lane change and it overshot the lane and it kind of went into the lane to the right, and then it had to correct itself. It was a really, the video doesn't even show real the justice to how it was sitting in the car and how it just quickly veered to the right, crossed right over a lane and a half, and then came back into our lane. So, I love that we're pushing forward with this technology. I love that, you know, once we get to full self-driving, you know, open up. Just be easy for you and I to drive to work. You know, the older people that can't drive anymore, they can hop in a car, let it take it to work, take them where they're going. They can go to the doctors and so forth. We need to keep pushing forward with this, but this shouldn't be released to the wide public in its current form. No way, in my opinion.
Okay, and that's like today is like the day that the button might show up on people's screens to allow them to opt in if they want to.
Exactly.
Right. So we're looking at the video now of where you're just pulling out and making that like naked left turn. And it's amazing that it can do this though, right? It kind of creeps up and it waits for the gap in the traffic. And then eventually, I mean, it's a really busy street, but eventually it sees it and it goes out and makes like a left turn across this big, large expanse of highway. So it's doing some things like really good, like amazing, but then it screws up simple things like that lane change that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, this maneuver here was probably the most impressive to me because we went across a really busy road where the cars were traveling like 50 miles an hour in both directions, and it was able to determine the right point which to creep forward and then make the left-hand turn.
Yeah, it's like, that blows my mind.
That looks insanely good. Just watch that. Let's watch that again. So it's such a busy road, hands off, and it just starts to creep, and then it really goes for it. Then it doesn't hesitate, does it? It goes.
Oh yeah,
right. Wow. Yeah. It was a very impressive maneuver. So I mean, like, and that was in the beginning, the first thing we did. So I was like, oh my god, this thing is amazing. But then, as you'll see in the video, shortly after it starts to make, you know, quite a few mistakes.
Right. Hey, Kyle, have you driven self-driving beta yet? Or ridden, I should say.
Hey, I'm working on connection issues here. Give me one second here. I'm really sorry.
Sure.
If you remember, Dom, Kyle did do a really early City Streets video.
Oh, that's right.
With kind of some background music, because it was at a time when he just didn't even want the voice of the person involved. It was really early when Tesla was super locked down on who had access to this. And so it was, just with some music in the background and just the video. But even then, it was pretty impressive. And that was, it must have been just weeks into, it would have been late last year.
Right. So we're,
I'm back now. Is this about the FSD drive that I took last year?
A long time ago.
Right.
Yeah. This was, I would say, early days, right? And my impression is it doesn't seem much better now than when I did it. When I did it, obviously, like, yeah, this like steering wheel confusion stuff, this happened all the time. It was impressive at the time because, you know, we had never seen anything like this on City Street. So like the fact that it could even do 20% of the tasks was really interesting.
Yeah, here's where it kind of screws up here.
This is dangerous. You know, look, at the end of the day, my biggest thing is I don't mind the technology out testing. We have to test technology to get better. No problem. But I think as soon as you put this in the hands of consumers that aren't properly trained to be a safety driver for, you know, driver assistance systems or autonomous driving systems, there's actually standards for this, then, you know, I think consumers generally don't know when they should or shouldn't intervene. And I'll say during my drive, you know, my impressions at the end of it was we curbed two wheels and almost killed about 10 people if I didn't take over. But that's why I'm there to take over.
Yeah,
and like I understood that. So no problem. My biggest issue is, okay, what happens when someone gets into the system? For example, Tom borrowed this car. It wasn't even Tom's personal vehicle that he signed all the stuff for. So who's going to stop anyone from just getting in a random car that has the software in it with zero training, zero knowledge? And that's when it gets really dangerous to me.
Right. So like last week, or was it last week, when this latest version first came out, there was a video that came out with somebody, you know, at the wheel. And, you know, the way that I really didn't like the way they handled it. They put it into this, you know, difficult situation, which is fine. But then they didn't take the wheel like nearly in time to, you know, had to stop the car and back up and they got themselves in a position that they should not have gotten themselves into. It's like, I don't believe that. I don't even think that person has had their license for that long. So, you know, it's not good. You need like people with like experience on the road, like, you know.
Yeah, my opinion is Tesla should be focusing. This is just, I know everyone will disagree with me. My opinion is Tesla should be focusing on safety features and functionality that can be available to the consumer today. The fact that Tesla doesn't have matrix LED headlights in Europe is mind-blowingly insane to me. Every car, cheap city cars from, you know, Opel Mach-E and up have matrix LED lights that can do everything. There's specific headlights, these new headlights that are in Europe, we're getting them in the US now, that they could have just put in a unit that does matrix LED. It's the safest thing at night. And they're not doing this. They're just focusing on having these awkward situations on FSD that Tom experienced. And to me, that's a bit of a shame because it means my product today isn't as good as it could have been. Maybe 10 years down the road, this will pay off. Maybe. No one knows. No one can say for sure this is the correct or wrong approach. No one knows either way. But yeah, I wish they would focus more on stuff available today. Rear cross traffic alert. Basic things that are in normal cars today. For example, if you're about to pull out into an intersection in a new Lexus, this is Toyota. They're like the most old school brand ever. The car will stop if you're about to pull in front of someone. Tesla has no sensors for this side data that's in active use today.
Right.
Hey, this is what I'd like to see.
That would be a great feature because I see a lot of accidents where people go into intersections without looking like left or right and someone's running the red light or yellow light and they get hit. And I'm looking, I watched the video back of this and I'm thinking, what? I mean, I don't know. I had a situation like this last week where I was coming through an intersection and I saw, you know, I look and I could see this Jeep coming and it's like a little bit too fast. I realized he didn't see me. So, you know, I hit my brakes and slowed down and, you know, then he kind of saw me and like,
well, driving in Florida is like driving in a battle zone. So, I mean,
there's other safety stuff as well they could be working on with the German manufacturers that are plowing a load of money into vehicle to street stuff in terms of using high frequency connections with street furniture, with lights, so that as a car is approaching a junction that has a blind corner, the car knows. Well, look, there's another car coming in the other direction and the light just turned red, but he's not slowing down. And so all of this technology is making its way into cars slowly. But what they're spending money on now to make sure that the cars and the cities are so interconnected that it becomes impossible to have a crash. That is incredible technology. And all of this could be worked on, but there's a handful of companies that are in this race for so-called self-driving. And so much of their value, of their company value, is based on the promise that they're going to get there. And so they're now in a situation that if they back away and say, any of these companies say, well, we'll go for full self-driving in 2030, like, they're going to instantly fall apart as the value that's been built up on this jam tomorrow, this constant promise of, oh, well, it's coming, it's 5 minutes away. And it's, I don't know, I find these systems exceptional on the highway and in stop-start traffic. So those two situations, if I'm doing 70, amazing. And if I'm just crawling in traffic and I don't want to be changing pedals and what have you, I find them, they just take so much load off as a driver. They're brilliant systems. But then the idea that there's going to be a million of these cars driving around as robo taxis and you can buy one and rent it out while you sleep, it's all bonkers. And it's such a shame that they don't spend any time.
Just look at this screen right here. Look at this one. This one's great. That is unbelievable. I mean, even normal people who aren't trained, like, for example, the driver, like, didn't even have time to put their hands back on the wheel. I'm not saying we shouldn't work on this stuff. I'm not saying, you know, don't roll out FSD. I get people want to play around with it, and it's a cool showcase of what the cars can do. But I really think Tesla needs to communicate real clear-cut safety standards to the driver. Elon even said it himself, one accident could be disastrous for the entire program. I would argue they're on that path right now to a lot of people driving these things willy-nilly, a lot of false information on Twitter going out saying they're full self-driving, we're good to go now.
Right. So there was, let's go for a second, but I did want to say that the Tesla Autopilot is getting an update that actually now sees and responds to emergency lights at night, which is a great, you know, addition to the thing, because there have been a few cases of people somehow running into the back of fire trucks or whatever parked on the side of the road, which is something that people without autopilot do like all the time as well. So it's not like a unique thing to Teslas or being on autopilot, but it should not happen, right? So this is a proactive bit of thing. So if it sees lights, you know, like emergency lights, it'll, you know, slow down and warn the driver on the screen.
Here's the reason why they have to do this, because autopilot, as a user all the time, really gives the impression that it's awesome. And it is fantastic, but it's so good 99% of the time, especially on a closed highway, that drivers will tend to lose focus. They'll tend to text, they'll do whatever, they'll look around at the scenery. I've done this. As much as I preach to be like, you have to pay attention, right, it does lull you into a false sense of security sometimes. And if you're just rolling through Wyoming at 85 miles an hour on autopilot, well, maybe checking, the scenery isn't such a bad idea. But it's been like, when I look up, I'm like, oh, there's a cop up there, or oh, there's a construction zone we're coming up. Like, reminder, the car doesn't know what's going on. It's so basic things that autopilot can't do right now for the user experience. For me, this is the most insane one. If I'm driving down a highway lane, I've tested this in Europe and the US now, and two lanes come together into one, for example, on the highway, as soon as that second lane meets the first one, the car views it as one big lane and it puts you right in the middle. And then it starts to wobble and then it chooses the original lane.
Right.
Like, people are like, they're going to drive my kids to school. It can't even pick which side of the lane to stay in on a closed highway.
Right. So, yeah, but I want to move on from Tesla, but
sure.
We hear you. And I'm thinking it's going to, I think that once they start getting like the AI really, self-learning, doing the self-learning thing with the monster supercomputer thing, you know, maybe I'm like naively optimistic. I've been accused of that, but I'm hoping that really makes a huge difference, you know, but I guess we'll see. I mean,
it's really impressive what they're able to do from a driver assistance standpoint, how smooth the car operates in day-to-day driving. I'm not saying I don't like autopilot. I use it every time I drive a Tesla. It's an amazing system. I just worry at the level of pace they're releasing these things. Is it to please investors, or is it to actually improve the ownership experience of the car?
Well, they say they haven't had an accident on FSD beta yet, so I'm hoping they're not just tempting fate when they mention that. But
hit the brakes and just before the accident, an FSD beta turns off. I mean, there's so many ways to calculate this. We don't really know truly the real statistics.
Right. So if the beta button goes up tonight, uh, or global editor-in-chief of Motor One and Inside EVs, John Neff, has this package on his Model 3. And if he hits that button, maybe we can get him on here next week to see what his experience is with it.
I think we'll schedule it in 2 months.
Like the if it happens today, the amount of real world data that they'll be collecting overnight is just a huge increase. And that can only be hopefully a good thing in terms of the system learning and getting better.
Right. I don't know if they have the AI, you know, computer backup set up, you know, well enough to take all that information and make huge improvements. Like, yet, I think that's still a work in progress. But anyway. Let's move on to what you, Kyle. I mean, we've lost Tom, it looks like, but let's talk about what you've been driving because, are there any more cars from Europe that you've driven that we didn't talk about yet?
Yes, some, but we'll wait till those go live. I think we just recently, the other day, put up the EVM Motors review, which is this DAS car. It's a little green pickup truck thing. And we posted it at totally the wrong time. And then I had a video go up and it smothered the views on this one. And I'm really killing myself for that because this was my most exciting video, I thought, from Europe. I was the happiest. It was the most personally interesting to me. And this is just like a little green pickup truck thing.
Like a mini Unimog?
Yes, it's a mini Unimog in a sense. It's a rugged city use or farm use electric truck that is like you could blow it up with a bomb and it would still survive. It's really cool. Okay. And it's not fast and it's not refined. And that's what I loved about it. It had such personality. After this, though, I think I can mention before we get into too many things, I want to talk about what I did yesterday more so than anything. I had a quick drive that I can't talk about for another few days in some Audi products, including e-tron S and Q4 e-tron. I cannot say anything more than that. So just to be fair to other colleagues that are on these events and things, there's embargoes, of course. It doesn't mean coverage is being influenced. It just means we all have to release our coverage at the same time. It means that we don't all have to show up on the same day. We can go at different days, and it's fair to everyone who goes to these first drive experiences. So that was cool. Then yesterday I flew to the U.S. Well, I flew to the U.S. 2 days ago, landed. I haven't been home yet, but I'm in Colorado.
You're in you're in your home state, but the other end of it.
Yeah, but I'm like 7 hours away from home. I flew right into the western Colorado. I went to Denver. I had a four-hour layover, which was just enough for me to go home and back, but I don't know if I would have made my flight in time. So I wanted to see the dogs, but of course that will wait. Yesterday was an insane day. Martin, if you head over to my Twitter, Porsche has done something incredible here. And I have to admire their ingenuity. And they invited me and two other outlets for the whole country to come and go on this overlanding adventure in a Taycan Cross Turismo. Now, it's no secret I love the Taycan. And, you know, I got to spend a lot of time with it on racetracks at top speed in Germany. In fact, today we just put up a video of our Taycan Turbo on the Nürburgring. And we really had a blast with this car. And, you know, the Cross Turismo version of the Taycan is sort of your a little bit higher ride height, a little bit extra body cladding, a gravel specific mode with ESP, ABS calibration, regen calibration, suspension calibration specifically for dirt and off-road. And we took this car on some crazy steep mountain passes, like actually stuff that, like, as you can see in one of those photos, big lifted Jeeps. This is the only thing out there. And then they're like, what are you doing in this electric brown station wagon? It was so cool. And it did so well. I mean, truly the capability of this car genuinely surprised me. And not even just the off-road capability, but the breadth of capability. The fact that I was in the same car at 160 miles an hour, shredding around the Nürburgring a few days earlier. And now I was out in the wilderness, rock crawling on top of a mountain pass at about 12,000 feet of elevation. It just is amazing what you can do with this car. And so we had an absolute great time. We got to meet a lot of locals, talk about electric mobility. From my perspective, it opened the conversation to electric overlanding and off-roading. Of course, we'll have dedicated vehicles for this. Rivian, Hummer EV, Cybertruck, et cetera, are going to be really tuned for this. But I love that Porsche was like, look, we're not afraid to go play around with those guys. Let's get our cars a little dirty too. and it was an amazing, amazing time.
What are the mods they did to the car?
Completely stock car, except for wheels and tires. So they put chunky all-terrain tires on it, and everything else, no skid plates, nothing special, no damage to the cars. Did 2 days of off-roading. Our friend Tommy from TFL went one day. Dan Edmonds went with him. And then yesterday, it was just me and the Porsche guys, and no damage to any of the cars. And we had wheels in the air. We had this thing rock crawling. In fact, if you go up on one of the Twitter posts, I parked the car with the rear wheel in the air, because it's not true off-roading until you lift a wheel, right? And yeah, it's really, really, really interesting.
Wow, that's so cool.
Right on. So you're mulling buying this thing actually for your own fleet, because it'll hold dogs and you have dogs.
Yeah, I'd like to. We'll think about it. I mean, look, it's a lot of money, and right, we're not sure how, you know, who knows if it'll do well or not, but from a numbers wise, but it's a cool car.
So this was the 4, not the 4S. So how much cheaper is that?
No, the one I took off road is a 4S, the burgundy car. You can see we literally drove it up a mountain and parked it at the top. No joke. And I love this picture so much. It's just incredible how cool this is. And so I'm actually going to take the 4 for the next few days. And, you know, I said, hey, Porsche, don't ship a car out of here. I'll gladly drive it. So I'm taking a Gran Turismo 4. And we were supposed to go on this rally today, but unfortunately, I don't think that's going to work out. I think I'm actually going to cancel some events and go home and see my dogs and Alyssa and see what's going on. So I'll probably take the Gran Turismo home to Fort Collins. We'll do some efficiency testing. It's the perfect range spec, no roof rails, aero wheels. So we can do our range testing with this car, our charging testing, everything normal. And one of the interesting things I want to look into with Taycan specifically, now that I'll have one at home, is there's a 200, there's a, you know, really fast charging profile, but it's the only car on sale that lets you limit the DC fast charging speed to preserve battery longevity. And it takes it from 270 kilowatts to 200 kilowatts. And one of my questions is, you know, does it just take off the peak, but then the end part of the pack is still at that same number, because then the stress is the same, but Porsche claims it's an entirely different curve. So I want to test this and compare it to the normal one, because if it's only a few minute difference from, you know, 10 to 80%, for example, well, then, you know, if one day I'm lucky enough to ever have one of these, I might consider using this lower charging profile to extend battery life. And then when I'm in a hurry, setting a cannonball record, for example, we'll open it up to 270. I think it's a great idea. Also, if you have to go shopping or do something, sometimes this car charges way too fast to be practical. I, in fact, almost wish there's like a cap it at 100 kilowatts for time so I can go and get my shopping done. But I think it's a great idea. We're going to test this functionality. And in fact, we made a TikTok with the car parked right here in this spot for our YouTube viewers, where I was able to pick up the car and teeter-totter it front to back. It's really cool. I'll put it up later today on Out of Spec Studios TikTok.
Okay. I haven't checked into your TikTok channel in a little
while. I haven't made many of them because we've just been so busy with YouTube stuff, but we'll get back into it.
That's cool. Yeah. I mean, I always get sucked in when I get on TikTok.
We crossed 110,000 subscribers on TikTok now.
Wow.
Something like this. Yeah. People love the car review things. I think it's an open area. Yeah. 116,000 subscribers, and we haven't really posted many videos at all recently. So we'll get there.
Right on. All right. So Martin, tell us about your decision. You're in the car buying, you're in the car market for your own needs. And you have a couple vehicles that you're looking at. And I was like kind of surprised you were just telling us after the show last week a little about the MGZS, depending on, I guess you call it the ZS.
ZSEV.
In the States, they call it Z.
Yeah. And we've had two Zoes now, and we've got a 3-year-old, and it's just too small with him and the child seat and everything we need. But we don't, you know, COVID lockdown year, we've not really gone anywhere, but we've got some holidays and some road trips booked now, and I don't really want to do them in the Zoe. And I'm going to be sad to see the second Zoe go, because we've got the middle one, which is the 41 kilowatt hour pack, and it's absolutely fine, but it charges on AC at 22. We have one that doesn't have DC fast charging. So it's probably time, if we're going to think about some more road tripping to change. And yeah, we went around the houses a lot, and I really settled on the Ioniq, the Hyundai Ioniq 5. One of my buddies has got a dealership here, and he's got some on a boat, and he's got one coming in November. And then just at the last minute, another one of my friends that sells cars for a living was talking to me about it and just kind of convinced me otherwise, really. And so rather than spending a huge amount of money on a brand new car that is the biggest and best ever, I decided to go the other direction. Now, we came home from the beach last weekend, having made the decision to purchase what is a £48,000 car.
Right.
And we came home from the beach and just my little fella had got sand everywhere. He'd smushed food into his baby seat. And I just thought, you know what? I know I would be grumpy, Dad, if I had a car that nice. I just know that I would be forever thinking like, oh my goodness, he's like brand new leather seats or what, you know, whatever the material is in the Hyundai. It's got amazing technology. I really want it as a toy, but I know until he starts school next year, I would just be so like all the time. If he can I have a drink, can I have a drink, Dad? And I'd be like, no, of course the answer is yes to your child. And so I think we'll go the other way. I think MG ZS EV, made in China by SAIC or SAIC, however you want to say it, started, I think, in 2019 here. So they're a couple of years in. They're onto their second software revision. They got rid of all the bings and the bongs and that. Brand new about 26 list, but it's about 23 when you do a deal with the dealer.
Right.
I get one for that's a year old that's 20 grand. And so that 20,000, we have to add 20% VAT on here as well. So if I take off 20% and, you know, put that into dollars, you know, that is what? I don't know. 20 grand, I guess, or take off 20% and then convert it to US dollars. But it's so little money. And it's a car that's got a 44 kilowatt hour battery. It's got a 7-year warranty. Fast charges at, I've seen 73. It's meant to do about 80 kilowatts, but I've seen Bjorn's videos doing about 73, 76. It'll do 160 miles real world. But the most important thing is that I can absolutely live with this vehicle for a year and put bikes in the back and on the roof, because the roof bars take about 35 kilograms on the early one. It can be a family car and I will not be grumpy, Dad. And that was the most important thing to me.
So
exciting. Sorry, Dominic, but I want to mention something too, because I got to go for my first ride in an MG ZS EV. and it was a really interesting story. I was in Oslo and we were going to pick up our Model Y from Marcus Biel. And we pulled up Uber. We said, okay, let's go over to the Tesla delivery center where we picked up this car. And it said, would you like a ride in an electric car? And I said, yeah, of course I want to ride in an electric car. Why wouldn't I? And then turned up an MG ZS EV Uber. And with a really passionate owner about EVs, and we talked about charging infrastructure in Norway, how it's no issue, how much he loved his car, how good it was in the winter time, how perfect it was for Uber usage, the cost, it seemed to be like the perfect urban-ish suburban EV that you could buy for the money. It seemed awesome. And by the way, incredibly smooth, great calibration, I felt, from motor, no cogging or anything like this. Like, it was really a good car. I was so impressed.
There's bits of it that've done really well. I think the brake blending in terms of the brake regen friction is some of the best I've experienced. It's kind of got the Kona lack of control when you really boot it. In terms of it will chirp its wheels and stuff. It's not the best traction control in the world, but because it's Chinese and nobody wants one because it's not a very sexy brand, everything's electric inside it. Everything is got Apple CarPlay because the infotainment system is really terrible in it, but I'll just plug my phone in every time. And so for 9 months to a year, we have decided this will be the car that my podcast EV News Daily drives. It'll be, you know, the podcast will have its first car in the fleet, which is very exciting. But
that's awesome.
There may be a second car added to the fleet very soon. And that is because I've been on the
Martin's gone full YouTuber here.
I've been on the wait list for a while for the Citroen Amy. And then I finally got the email to say you can now reserve yours over the weekend before they go on sale on Monday. So look, this is 6 grand. Now, even if you only had this as your second car, which it would be a second or third car, how amazing is this going to be to go to the shops in?
Right. But you'll never know if you're coming or going, though. It's like
it's meant to be like that. All the panels are interchangeable. It's a push me pull you. The front is the back. The doors are all the same. They're hinged on different sides. But they just make the door. Like they don't make two different doors. It's just the door. And they just
attach. I love everything about this.
Look, it's got storage. Look at all of that payload.
And so, the top speed is 28 miles an hour, I believe, right?
Yeah. 5.5 kilowatt hour battery.
Can you do that in your town and not get run over?
It's going to be amazing. And so I just got the email this morning to say, yeah, it goes on sale Monday, but I can get ahead of the, because I was part of the wait list. I can get in on some action now.
If you can chip it like you could chip a Twizy.
Oh, yes.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Because Twizzies will do like 80 miles an hour. I drove a chipped one. We haven't spoken about it yet. Maybe we will after this, but which is my dream car. And I hope we can tune this so Martin can do like 70 miles an hour sideways in the Amy. Because, I love everything about this. I saw one in the exact same spec in the south of France while I was driving a car I can't yet talk about, but it was, again, a prototype car, and like you really can't damage this thing. And I nearly stuffed it into like 9 people in a wall because this drove by, and I was like, "Whoa, this is the best thing ever!" And I'm so happy Martin's getting one. I'm gonna go to the UK to visit Martin just to go for a ride in this.
Just to come,
no
for
other
a
reason,
ride.
Not to see him, just to go see his car.
No, you can have the car, you can take it. So I think I'm gonna take it places, right? So I think if I go to an EV festival or I go to like a local EV owners group, because I tend to try and before COVID and support those. I think I'll just put this on a trailer and then take it
tow
200 or 300 miles.
Can you tow it? Tow?
Yeah, of course I should do. And if not, I'll find something to tow it and then just take it off and let people play with it. I mean, surely I can get some sort of insurance that means anyone, you know, like dealer insurance that anyone can drive or whatever. It would be amazing just to let people have a go in. So you've got to be, I think, 17 to get a provisional license here. And so in France, you can drive it from 14 because it's officially a light quadricycle. It's not a car. So it means you can avoid some of the safety tests. But I believe it's going to be, look, you're doing 28 miles an hour. How much, you know,
how much damage
could
you possibly do?
Yeah, really. So,
we could find out and make a video.
I remember brilliant. Being 14.
Yeah, like what at 14? Yeah, they don't get in trouble. So, but you can in France, but here you got to be 17. But I think it's going to be amazing just to have this to let people see and enjoy. And I don't know how long we'll keep it for, but yes. So in 1 week, I think my podcast has probably will buy two cars this weekend. So yeah, we should sign the MG tomorrow. I couldn't make it down to the dealer today.
All right. So we'll hear about that tomorrow and hopefully we'll see some videos from you too. That'd be great.
Oh man, but especially I don't know when the Amy's arriving. I think for the UK they're going to put type 2 charging on because in France again it's just a domestic socket. It's 3 hours to charge.
Okay.
I think for our spec it's going to be more expensive than in France, but I believe they're adding type 2 or an adapter or something so I can charge it.
I want this so badly. You have no idea. As soon as they're 25 years old and I can import one, I'm getting a Twizy and I'm getting this. And this will be my full collection.
Like a 5.5 kilowatt hour battery is brilliant. It'd be so lightweight.
Yeah, no, that's great. That's a good size. Anyway. What's your speed limit there in the cities?
Oh, it's around town. It's 30. Well, school zones are 20. So,
okay.
So he's fine in the school zones.
You can still get a ticket as soon as he
goes out, he'll start holding traffic.
Oh man, I can't wait. So I'll let you know what the latest. I think it's early next year it arrives. So that'll be
right,
a nice
we're going to tune
party.
It. This thing's doing 80 miles an hour by the time I get there. It's going to be a rocket ship.
All right. Hey, so let's get into some news for a second. But first, let's get a message from our new sponsor, Electrify America.
This week's Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by Electrify America, and we're so happy to be partnering with Electrify America until the end of the year. With Electrify America, you can drive your EV from coast to coast with more than 650 charging stations nationwide and new locations opening every week. Electrify America is bringing EV drivers the freedom they need. Whether you want to plan a weekend getaway, maybe you're off to see some friends or relatives, maybe it's a coast-to-coast road trip, you can ask our Kyle about how that's done using Electrify America charging stations. Well, you can rely on Electrify America's ultra-fast chargers to get you back on the road faster. So, where will you go charging on Electrify America? Let us know in the comments below. We'd love to hear what your plans are for this weekend and tell us where you'll go next. And you can learn more at electrifyamerica.com.
All right. So, as we told you last week at the end of the show, reservations for the debut edition of the Cadillac Lyric opened up on Saturday, the Saturday past. But if you want,
can I interrupt for a half a second? I'm sorry. Because someone just commented, you know, does anyone suspect the love of the VW Group cars after the VW Group ad from Electrify America? We mention this sometimes, but Electrify America lets us say whatever we want. They have no control over our stuff. And I have no problem sharing when my charging sucks and it doesn't work, which is probably 50% of the time. It's really annoying. Although I haven't done it recently, I'll take the Taycan and I will report accurately of how good or how terrible the charging sessions are. They have no creative control over what we say.
Right. Yeah. No. We have really no fear here. We say what we like, what we believe, what we experience. We have to be, you know, transparent and honest with what we're doing. But yeah, thank you. Yeah, and I'd also like to see someone mentioned about West Virginia. There's a lack of stations in West Virginia, and I really want to see something happen there. I have a sister I want to go visit and an uncle, in another family, and they live in West Virginia. And I would love to go be able to drive an EV up there to see them. And
well, take a Tesla. Superchargers everywhere.
I don't even in West Virginia, I think there's only
one. No problem. You go anywhere you want in West Virginia in Tesla.
Anyway, I'll have to look up on the map.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I've driven across it many times.
I mean, Tesla's not going to send me a car, so that's not going to happen.
No. Yeah, they don't have a PR department, no press cards. But I'm just saying,
right,
it's possible to put chargers there. Electrify America intentionally left West Virginia off their map. Why? I don't know. But we'll see.
Right. All right. So, but Cadillac Lyric. So, yeah. They opened up reservations last Saturday, but you had to be like not only fast to get in there, but you had to be lucky. That's because like the undisclosed number of vehicles ended up being spoken for in mere minutes. But even if you were on the site in time, though, you may have had a glitch and lost your chance to get a car. Rory Harvey, vice president of Global Cadillac, put out a statement about the situation, but like failed to mention any issues. Said he, today, reservations for the 2023 Cadillac Lyric debut edition sold out in just over 10 minutes, and we continue to see a lot of enthusiasm, yada, yada, yada. Since the show car unveiling last year, more than 200,000 people have expressed interest in learning more about the vehicle and our electric future, yada, yada, yada. While 2023 Cadillac Lyric debut edition reservations are full, more vehicles will be available to order through the Cadillac dealer network starting summer 2022. Yada, yada, yada. Okay. So if you subscribe to the EV News Daily podcast on Apple or Google Podcasts.
Run by some crazy dude.
Or Spotify. Crazy guy. Or any of the other top podcast platforms, which you should, you'd have already heard Martin's epic rant about this the other day. And in case you haven't, Martin, maybe you can fill us in on how you think Cadillac screwed this up. I mean,
I'll give you the short version.
Isn't selling out of reservations good though?
It's like, no, what a massive screw up here with the Lyric. All they had to do was put it up for reservation and then in 24 hours' time gauge the response. You know who did that? Ford with the F-150. You know what they got? Tons of great press because they went, hey, got 100,000 reservations. You know who did that? Tesla with the Model 3. What, 400 and something thousand reservations when the Model 3 went up? What they did with the Lyric is they put it up. It was a stupid system online where you had to pick your local Cadillac dealer. And of course, lots of Cadillac dealers have gone, I don't fancy spending the money that you asked me to. So I'm handing the franchise back. So lots of people were like, oh, like my local dealer is no longer there, or I can't get past this section. And there was an undisclosed number of cars and it means the car has now sold out. What's that? 2 cars? 10 cars?
I was going to say 2 cars.
1 car? 1,000 cars?
Like, yeah.
50,000 cars. Like, what's the number, Cadillac?
Right.
What's the number so we can judge it? But simply saying Oh, now it's sold out. So many, like, they got so much stuff on Twitter back saying, look, I've just been here for weeks waiting for this car. All they had to do was open it up to reservations and tell a good news story. And they some companies are so good at just screwing something up royally. And they really did it. And all they had to do was just take people's $100 refundable deposit and say you're in the queue and everyone would be so happy. But instead, they've got a lot of people who they really, really upset because they were like, "Ha, you didn't make it now. You are not special to us." What a crazy way to treat people.
Should they have had like an open-ended amount of debut editions?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, just call it the debut edition. What have you got to do? Put a bit of chrome trim on the back and some stitching inside that says debut edition on the dash. I mean, what have you got to do in the factory? Nothing at all. There's Hyundai.
A good point.
I found out this week the Hyundai 40 Ioniq 5. There's like the 45, Project 45.
Yeah,
was meant to come. Well, it does come with a certain feature, and I won't say what it is to spare the embarrassment of who told me. But they forgot to take it out of the production line, so they made all of the launch edition cars with the features. Then they put all the others into production, and people have been getting their cars, being like, "Oh, I've got this amazing door handles," and it's like, oh, crud, we better tell the factory. So to these car companies, it makes no difference, these debut launch editions. Right. They will spec it out. But it's just a real shame. What a massive cock-up. What a massive shame.
Maybe they were originally planning on, like, I don't know, 1,000 or 1,500 debut editions. I don't know what the number is.
We have no idea. It could be five.
If they had have gotten, like, I don't know, 5 or 10,000 orders, they could have then just said, hey, we got 5 or 10,000 orders, and that would be impressive. Because
hey, amazing!
Or don't just launch it for a specific edition. Have a limited number of whatever launch edition cars they want, and then say, "Oh, sorry, we're out of those. Why don't you place a normal one? If someone cancels, we'll let you know when you can get a launch edition."
Yeah. It's just a real shame that it's a really exciting car for the money, for the spec you get for the money.
Yeah, it is a good
deal. It would have brought a lot of people back to the Cadillac brand, and instead they managed to alienate people from the Cadillac brand. How do they do that? I don't even care. I don't even get the car over here, and it annoyed me.
I love angry Martin when he goes.
Because you know what this is? It's non-EV people in these car companies getting involved. When the good EV people, like last week, Darren on from Ford, when the good EV people, like when you talk to the good EV press people and they get it, they know. And then what happens? People get involved in these big companies. They go, oh, what we should do is we should sell out. And then the headline, Lyric sells out. But like, that's so 20 years ago marketing.
Right. Like, GM does have some good EV people too.
Yeah, they do. They really do. But that's all of that kind of scarcity is just all BS. What if Tesla went, oh, we're going to, 1,000 Cybertrucks and the rest of you losers, you didn't get in the queue. No, there's half a million people around the world going, I'm in the queue for a Cybertruck. They'll never convert that to an actual order, but they become brand whilst their $100 is locked up for free loan money.
They have a Cybertruck on order.
And they're telling their friends about it.
The biggest brand ever. I'm getting one of those. Yeah, right. I'm getting a Cybertruck. That's
very good points, man. You should go into marketing or something.
Hey, well, I'm not a Cadillac. They don't like me anymore.
You've misspent your youth doing radio or something. I don't know.
But does it matter? No, it's just, it makes me sad.
Yeah. All right. I don't know, Kyle, did you have anything you wanted to add to this?
Nothing. No interest.
Do you have no interest in the Cadillac Lyric itself?
Oh,
I'm
at this point in time, I'm not excited about it. I mean, like when I drive it and it's good, maybe we'll see.
Right.
But
that's true. Right.
You know, again, it's not, we don't know. We just don't know until we get it. So I don't really want to focus on it until deliveries happen. By the way, can we mention that what Tom was doing in Colorado? We can't say anything about it, but can we say what he was here for? I think that's public.
Yeah, I think that's public.
Because we didn't say it on this podcast, but Tom was experiencing Rivian in Breckenridge. And everyone knows they were having their event there because our friends at TFL put out a video as to why they're not reviewing a Rivian. They made amazing points. I thought this is a great video to check out if you want a little inside industry about how not to treat outlets that are relatively large with a great audience. I thought this was a really transparent video. I enjoyed it.
It was transparent.
And look, I think they're not wrong. These automakers that choose to favor certain outlets for vehicle launches or for, just even initial drives, this is a rough situation for not even like us, like we're pretty small, but like for other large outlets to deal with these things. So Tom was experiencing Rivian. We don't know anything about it. He can't tell us what he thought yet until I think another couple weeks, something like this. I don't know.
Motor Trend has been telling us about it, though. We have a good idea of what it's... Motor Trend just had another article about
it. It's so hard to trust a single outlet.
Right.
We don't know Motor Trend's and Rivian's relationship on the back end. We don't know if it's paid. We don't know if it's totally unbiased. We don't know who at Motor Trend likes it. You know, there's always two sides to every story.
Sure.
You know, I can say a car is absolutely amazing, where the next person will say it's absolutely terrible. And so it's good to have multiple outlets, multiple opinions. It would be a terrible world if we only had Kyle's reviews, because I'm, you know, just me. No one else really thinks about cars like I do. This is why there's multiple people. So the whole like Motor Trend's just covering Rivian one-sided from me, it's hard to say. We don't know yet until it's released, but it sounds like it's coming, and that'll be great.
It's really hard not to have an unconscious bias as well. If you are the first outlet in the world to get this, like Motor Trend got it for a couple of months or a long, like 40 odd days.
Yeah.
Even the most professional, if that was me, I would be like, nope, I'm going to be completely unbiased. I'll say that even then I would feel an enormous compliment was paid, and there would be an unconscious bias for me to say nice things about that vehicle. And I defy anyone to say, oh no, I'd be completely impartial. If you were the first person in the world to get access to something that was very, if you got the new iPhone, you're a tech reviewer 2 months before it was on stage, it'd be really hard to be unbiased. And so that's why I'm really keen to see. Well, Tom, well, we know where Tom has been, but he's not allowed to tell us, and he hasn't been. Right. We've been trying to bleed him dry of information.
Yeah, we're like, Tom, well, how did it handle over rocks? Like, what did you do? Like, how was the cooking system? He just like will not say a thing.
He won't tell us. Even offline, he won't tell us.
So Tom, in his previous career, I believe ran a restaurant. Was it Italian restaurant?
Yes, it was, I believe, called Nona's. I went there because I've known Tom since I was 12. Just because, or maybe I was a little bit older, I don't know, but my dad and him, we used to do like EV stuff together, like was interested in cars. So one day Tom hosted like a BMW i3 meetup when they first came out, and Tom had one of the first i3s and my dad had one of the first i3s. I went with my dad to Tom's restaurant. I had no idea who this guy was. And Tom made us pizza. It was great. And so Tom makes like the best pizza.
Okay, so like I don't know if this happened or not, but I'm really hoping that Tom got to make pizza on the Rivian. Well, hopefully we'll find out next week. So,
I don't know. I think he probably couldn't do that. I don't know.
I think
but I think once we get a Rivian to review, either from a viewer or from Rivian, then I would like to see Tom do a cooking review, making Italian food with the Rivian.
Yes, because that's his like that's what he can do. He's like a man of many talents. That's awesome. All right. So let's move on to another luxury vehicle. The U.S. pricing for the Mercedes EQS was just released, and it caused a bit of a stir. Apparently, they've given a cheaper price tag than the S-Class, which is, I guess, the Mercedes flagship. There will be two powertrain versions available, the rear-wheel drive EQS 450 Plus or the all-wheel drive EQS 580 4MATIC. They both get the same battery. It's 107.8 kilowatts usable. It's probably like 115 kilowatts in total. The EQS 450 Plus price starts at $102,310, and there's like $1,050 destination. So that comes up to $119,110. No, that's not right. Where's my math?
That'll be 103 something, won't it? 103, and then about 110 for the S-Class, isn't it? To get into an S-Class?
Yeah, but this is such a silly thing because no one buys base S-Classes. So it's no one. You cannot find a zero option S-Class in this country. Everyone just gets everything. And like occasionally you'll see like a livery car that has no options except executive rear seats. This is common in New York. Everyone's going to option these things up. At the end of the day, they're close enough in price. You'll get a big tax credit with the EQS, and it's going to be great. I mean, it's really going to be interesting. I haven't driven the car yet. I've had the opportunity to play around with it in person, make some video walkarounds and stuff, and I get to drive it in a few weeks. I'm really looking forward to this, so I will share what I think when I can.
Right. So the S-Class, I get it out there. It's the S-Class starts at $109,000, $109,800 before destination. So that makes it the base EQS is $7,500, say, less expensive than their flagship. And of course, the EQS also gets 2 years of free Electrify America charging, 30-minute sessions, which the S-Class does not get.
Yeah, I don't think this matters. It really, the price is close enough.
So there was a big discussion about this in the Motor One chat room when this, you know, the pricing came out. And, you know, we're wondering if there was like sending any sort of special message with that. You know, does the S-Class deserve to be more expensive than the S-Class at this point in history? Maybe it's not quite up to S-Class standards yet. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm sure that the regular S-Class is going to be objectively a nicer car than the EQS. This is my impression. EQS should be on the same level in terms of features and maybe feel, but there's going to be something. Mercedes will never let the S-Class not be the best. So this is my impression.
The S-Class is really, I mean, I've never driven the S-Class or even in it, but the Motor One team who I, you know, I respect, whose opinions I respect, you know, they were saying like the S-Class is really, really well screwed together. It's a great car.
Yeah.
That's a great,
I've been in every generation for like the last seven generations of S-Class. Okay. I've been the biggest S-Class fan forever because it's always led the way in terms of technology and innovation when it comes to vehicles. Before, obviously, this new electric revolution, the S-Class was the pinnacle, and it's always captured my mind, and it's always been this really insane vehicle. Now, so it's a little bit less impressive, but even then, you know, if you get into a modern S-Class, it does things like it has 10 degrees of rear steer for a combustion vehicle. It has, you know, insane technology in this car that, you know, do the owners use any of it? I don't know, but we'll see. I think the EQS will do really well in Europe. I have no question about this because there's S-Classes everywhere and there's a whole electric trend going on. In the US, it's going to be really interesting to watch this.
So this is the challenge for electric vehicles. Can they, you know, match or even exceed the standard set by like a car like the S-Class? You know, I love the interior shot. I mean, I know the S-Class is kind of close to that in some ways, but man, I don't really like the exterior design so much of the EQS. Maybe in person it looks better, but the interior, man, I love all that.
It's a quality interior. I got to sit in there. Everything feels nice. Everything works really well. It's deep level of integration. You can have situations where the car is recognizing which seat someone's speaking from. You can have different profiles on each of the different screens. You have massaging, heated, cool seats. You have a nap mode. I mean, the features list is insane. And the only reason you can develop this level of integrated features is when you have a whole vehicle, you know, a brand that you can develop all these technologies for. And that's what the EQS benefits from, is it gets, you know, they can just take a lot of bits and pieces from their other cars. On the other hand, Lucid, which is another super interesting car in this exact segment, is starting fresh and doesn't have this, you know, insane level of technology going across, because they just haven't had all the last 50, 100 years to develop all this stuff. Now, is Lucid going to be tailored more and have all the features that actually matter to someone who's going to be buying a car in this class? Possibly. And EQS features will probably be used, like 10% of them will probably be used by someone who owns one. So, you know, there is that balance there. But there's no questioning the EQS is going to be a technical marvel when it comes out in terms of its deep integration with in-cabin subsystems.
The Lucid Air is cheaper than the EQS. For some reason, I was thinking it was like a lot more expensive.
Well, not the Lucid's image. Very reasonable for an entry model. But yeah, if you're going to go for the crazy fast one in the range, honestly, I think the base Lucid, at least based off of paper, is the way to go.
Yeah.
So we're looking at, if you're watching this, if you're not watching this on YouTube right now, we're looking at the price comparison between the EQA and the Lucid Air. And the Lucid Air is MSRP is $89,990. The EQS is $119,110. The EQS should get about 400. I think it's going to do better than the Model S long range. Actually, I think it's going to be like 15, 420. I think there it's like 487 or something like that, 45 WLTP. Yeah. So EPA range, I think it's going to be, I think they're going to put it above Tesla long range, but that's still going to be less than the Lucid, which is like 450 to 520 miles, their model range. And also Lucid has like a lot more horsepower or power speed acceleration than the EQS. Like
can we just say stuff. We're really not looking forward to range testing any of these cars.
Bring them down here, man. I'll do it.
Yeah. Yeah. 500 and like 520 is crazy. Or you can go, that's for the R version of the Lucid, or you can go for the P version and get 1,111 horsepower, but you lose like 49 miles of range.
You just can't make it to your place then, can you?
Yeah, you can't. Yeah. 471 miles is
not acceptable.
I have to drive like to New Orleans and back or something to test drive one of these things.
Crazy. How much range do you need? But it's not about the battery size. It's about efficiency with Lucid. It's why we can't wait to get them. How far do you guys think we are away from seeing Lucid on people's driveways? The media event is next week. That's pretty public, I think, isn't it?
I think in a few days I'm going over there, yeah.
Yeah, it's been reported, the media event, and also for early reservation holders. So it's being talked about on the forums.
Okay, right.
Yeah.
So I think do you reckon they're going to be in driveways? A month? 2 months?
Who knows? We'll find out. You know, at this point, I think it should have already happened according to their earlier communications back in the day. Mm. I have pretty high level of confidence in their production capabilities because I know the guy who runs production. He's a cool dude. I've known him for years. And like, I trust this guy because he used to run Audi production. So 1 month for Lucid deliveries, Dave Black says. Let's see. At this point, they're not in the hands of customers, and there's no denying that. Like right now, it doesn't exist until someone takes delivery.
All right. So I'm looking forward to hearing.
Rivian or Lucid? Who will deliver the first customer vehicle?
Didn't Rivian make a delivery?
No.
Well, I mean, maybe they have. We don't know.
Oh, I thought it was like a factory. Oh, maybe it was the first production.
They produced the first one.
Yeah.
Not a delivery.
And they got certification to sell it in all 50 states, which is also a thing, I guess, to do.
How's that possible? Tesla can't sell in Texas. Direct sales to manufacturer.
I mean, it's a federal thing. It's not a state level thing.
Oh, so they're like approved for road use then.
I guess, yeah.
Okay. I don't know. I haven't looked into it. But that's interesting. I don't know. Look, either way, both are super interesting. Rivian's going to capture the heart and minds of the adventurer. Lucid's going to capture the heart and minds of the technically minded. And these are two generally different buyers, and it's going to serve awesome new people, some really cool cars. Let's hope. We'll see. And I can't wait to test them. The end of this year into early next year is just going to be so busy with all these new EVs, all the stories we can tell, all the adventures we can go on. I was just off-roading an electric Porsche. Like, we're doing crazy stuff now. It's going to be really cool.
Okay. So let's talk about the price of another vehicle. This is much closer to the budgets of crossover buyers and very close to a particular electric competitor. Audi has announced the prices for its Q4 e-tron and Q4 e-tron Sportback. Now, this vehicle is based on the MEB platform, like the VW ID.4 that I drove last week, and is also the same size, basically, as that car. Its exterior and exterior design is very different, though. And it has a few different features that I think the VW ID.4 does not have. The prices, though, aren't that different. The Q4 40 rear-wheel drive starts at $43,900 plus $1,095 destination, make it $44,995. So basically starts at $45,000. The ID.4 rear-wheel drive Pro starts at $39,995 plus $1,195 destination. Guess it's a $41,000, $190 price tag. So there's a $3,800 difference basically between them, $3,805. I don't know, man. The Q4 50 e-tron Quattro starts at $49,000. Let's just put the destinations in those. The Quattro starts at $50,995. The ID.4 Pro S, that's the top level spec without the gradient package. So, you know, so it's up there and kind of package level with the Quattro, which also has a few other packages. But anyway, that one's $49,370, so only a $1,625 difference. It gets pretty close. I don't know. Kyle, you like the looks of this?
So I think give me a couple of days because I don't want to like infringe on any embargo stuff because right. I've been able to
right,
like, that exact car is the one I got to drive. I believe the cool. license plate's the same. I think I have to look.
Right.
Anyway, you know, this is the thing, but there's a lot of market specific things I wasn't able to experience. So we're going to hold off on everything. Right. Now that we have the US ordering guides, I have to go back and look to see, because obviously EU spec is going to be different than the North American spec vehicles.
Right.
My impressions from the styling is Q4 e-tron. Look, we know it's the exact same drivetrain. So there's right. nothing to hide right. there. We know that I'm pretty sure the ID4 gets the lifted all-wheel drive suspension. I think this yes. gets the GTX suspension coming to the US.
So
I think this is going to have a lower ride height than ID4 all-wheel
half
drive.
An inch.
I still need to confirm this, but I'm pretty sure this is ID4 GTX coming to the US. And to me, the ID4 has so much more personality, so much more enthusiasm, happiness around the car. This is like when it's like when I put on a suit, I look a little bit out of place. Like, okay. Why is Kyle like dressed up?
So let me put it this way. So the VW i4 is, the Audi Q4 is business and the VW ID4 is like business casual?
No, I would say the ID4 is casual and then the Q4 e-tron's like, when someone very casual tries to look businessy.
Brilliant.
Right. It's amazing how different like the interiors and exteriors look.
Look at the bottle cars. Holder there. We can comment on that. Those are awesome. You can put giant bottles in the doors and both right front and rear, by the way.
Okay.
I did a full in-depth like hour-long tour of this car that I'll put up on Inside EVs as soon as I'm allowed to.
With a strong focus on bottle holders.
But even with the tax credit, because if you're buying this car, you probably you're probably paying that much tax that it's applicable. That takes it down to 37.38 for a car that's got a 82 kilowatt hour battery pack. It'll do 0-60 less than 8 seconds. It's going to have 201 horsepower. I think that is. I'm never going to.
It's
going to
do well.
Yeah, like it's not cheap. It's not cheap. But 37 grand after your incentives, before any local level stuff, is brilliant value compared to going back a couple of years when this kind of stuff wasn't on the market. I think it's amazing. Less than 40 grand effective price.
It just comes down to leasing because I think these cars, they want to keep inside the loop. When I was speaking with Herbert Diess a few weeks ago, the idea between Volkswagen's mentality for these cars is they want to keep it as closed loop as possible. This means they lease the car, they still own it. They can release the car second life. They can then get the car back, recycle everything, reuse the battery somewhere else. So as soon as that car is sold to a consumer, they can try to get it back either on a trade-in or something down the line. And this will, of course, be a little bit easier and harder in market-specific areas. For our area, I think this strategy is going to be the hardest because we have private-owned dealers with such a huge landscape, with owners that are protective over their cars and they want their own machines. But I think overall, Audi or Volkswagen Group wants the cars to just stay inside their internal cycle, right. leasing and ride sharing, etc. And so I hope the Q4 e-tron has a really good leasing structure. There was a time when the full-size e-tron was leasing better than the current dealer offers for ID4 right now.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I mean, I wish I had the leasing numbers. I saw the leasing numbers for the ID4.
Yeah, but you can't go by
437?
That. Yeah, but this isn't accurate. People are walking into dealers, they're getting quoted $600-$700 a month. Some people are getting $500-$600. It depends a lot on credit score, area, terms, mileage. There's so many calculations
down,
that go into leasing. Right. Yeah, but it doesn't really make sense to put money down on a lease. Just put taxes and fees down because at the end of the day, it you don't want to pay, there's no incentive to putting money down on a lease essentially. So you just eat the monthly payments on it. So it's going to come down to, and I would think it'll be hilarious, but I'm sure it will happen. Audis generally lease really well and Volkswagens generally haven't in the US. And so I'm thinking, and this is just purely speculation, I bet Q4 e-tron certain months of the year will be cheaper than ID4 to lease.
Wow.
A speculation.
But the Q4 does have some interesting features as on the feature list that they have. I don't know if you can talk about if they're different from what you saw or whatever, but there was AR option for the AR screen and everything.
I had this in ID3 when I was there.
Okay. And, I didn't see that in the ID4 unless
it's not available in the US, but ID4 in Europe has it.
Okay.
As an option.
Hmm. Did you like it in the ID3?
Yeah, I think it's really cool. It's a little not so crisp. It's like not nearly as good as like the BMW heads-up displays, which I think are probably some of the best, and they're huge. They fill up the windshield. This was quite large. The augmented reality stuff was a little awkward and like 1980s video gamey, but overall it worked well. Is it worth whatever they would charge us for here? I would say I probably wouldn't pay more than $700 or $800 for it on an option. And my guess is if it came to the US, it adds order complications, especially to Volkswagen. They need to streamline their offerings, and it would increase the price of the car. And Q4 e-tron is going to have it, so there's another differentiation for you.
Oh, also interesting, the Q4 e-tron, the Q4 has the Sportback version, like so the coupified version that Kyle generally doesn't like because it's harder for to put dogs in the back. But VW uglier. Doesn't have that. There's no there's no VW Sportback option, right?
Good. We don't want it. Keep it out of here.
All right, so let's talk about another vehicle that you might be able to put some dogs in. Rivian applied for a new kind of sliding door patent, but what for? Is it possibly considering a minivan? Whoa. So I didn't take a whole lot of notes.
That was the most genuine whoa I've ever heard. That was great.
So, I mean, I didn't even take any notes about this, but because it just seems like so out of kind of nuts. Like, Rivian's whole deal is like adventure vehicles, and minivan is like the other spectrum. It's like another planet from adventure vehicles. Like, is this possible?
Could it just be for their Amazon van that they need a sliding door for?
Yeah, no, probably. I don't think so. No, I mean, they have the back sliding door, and they have we mentioned that in the article. That's like on Inside EV. So yeah, you can look that up on Inside EV, and we talk about that. I don't believe it is. Or it could be for like an overlanding.
Well, we'll just see when they announce it. We'll see. Yeah. when it makes production, we'll see.
Okay. I mean, down the article, there's a more of a sketch of the actual like a van thing, and it looks like a minivan. Like I don't know. Does that look like an existing one that you've seen before anywhere?
I don't know. That's just
it looks like a Honda Odyssey to me.
Right. Ugh. That's kind of what I was
saying. No, people love their Odysseys. You do not diss an Odyssey owner. You will never hear from that person again in your life. These people are the most passionate owners. And if you get the top one, you can get a built-in vacuum cleaner, which is pretty cool.
Right.
We don't have that car here, but
it's actually, they're very popular in like, you know, young family, suburban metro areas. They're kind of all over the place.
Okay.
Yeah. I heard the Pacifica is kind of nicer though. And you can,
what was
Pacifica
that?
I heard the Pacifica is actually kind of nicer now.
No, the Carnival is the minivan to get. The new Kia Carnival rocks. This thing is so cool.
All right. Well, we need an electric minivan. So I don't know.
If Model X, gonna make it. E-tron.
Yeah. Those aren't minivans. Not really. Yeah.
Model X is a minivan.
Not
okay. Fancy. You want a real minivan,
an actual minivan, sliding doors, and yeah. Okay, so let's talk about this real quick. LG resumes Chevy Bolt EV and EUV battery production. So this is a ongoing saga. You may be familiar with the Chevy Bolt EV has had battery recalls. There's been a few fires, and it's a huge major deal. Like, $2 billion worth of major deal for GM, and it looks like they're finally getting a handle on it. At least LG plants in Michigan have resumed production of battery cells and battery modules with updated manufacturing processes. So LG is adding capacity to provide more cells, which now they need roughly up to 9 gigawatt hours of batteries just to complete the recall. That's a lot of batteries, and that's in besides like the regular production. The car is supposed to be in the production. The company says that replacement battery modules will begin shipping to dealers as soon as mid-October. So if you're waiting for your modules to be replaced and you can't park in your garage and charge, and they're telling you to park it like 50 feet away from other cars, like I don't even know how you do that. So if you're not trying to get GM to sell it back to you or buy it back from you by calling the concierge line, the Bolt EV concierge line. That's how you begin that process of buybacks. Mid-October is when those modules will start shipping, and it's unclear when exactly Bolt EV and EVU production will restart with these new cells. See, within about 60 days, though, GM intends to launch a new advanced diagnostic software package for the Bolt EV EUV. So once installed at the dealership, it will increase the available battery charging parameters over existing guidance, which is, what, 30 to 80% or something? Now Bolt owners are advised not to charge, you know, past, what I think, I believe it's 80%, and not below 30%, or at least not for, I don't know. It's a mess. But anyway, so
and it's already a mess. That's the best way to do it. I want to do
the whole thing.
I just want to shoot a video, and I'm so busy, I don't really have time, but I really want to shoot a video living with a Bolt EV in downtown Denver, which is where a lot of Bolts live, given their restrictions.
Right.
It can. Yeah. So like you have to stand by the car while at level two charges. So you just sit there. Right. And then you got to like park it near someone, but you have to like make room. So I want to go into like parking garages and like ask people to move their cars away from this one. I think it would be total satire. It would, people would really get upset with me because it would be total joking, of course. But right, for some people, it might actually be closer to reality than we think.
Yeah. And the most important thing is that hopefully those cars start to this month, next month, October, they start that process, and then there'll be something happening with those cars. It's just ridiculous that people.
Yeah, but there's going to be new things. Like, are the people at the service centers going to be well trained? Also, interestingly, they say 70 miles of range, but the Bolt uses a guessometer, which means you could have 70 miles of range. Like, if you hypermile this thing really far down low, or if you drive it aggressively, this is still like 40% state of charge. It just totally depends on your driving style. It's not an accurate thing, and it doesn't have anything to do with battery pack capacity. 70 miles is a totally variable number. And also, are you looking at your middle number? And because the Bolt shows max and min, so which 70 are we supposed to be looking at? It's totally arbitrary to me.
Somebody from GM this week, I forget the senior manager, I forget the exact words of the quote, but it was along the lines of, one of the things we've done is working with our close partner in this, LG, is to install some extra quality metrics in their production process. That just sounds like they've gone in and gone, right, what the hell have you done with these batteries? You are giving us a bad name. LG's not getting a bad name, they can't afford. This is it. Like, this is their one gimme. They can't afford any more problems. Every has to be perfect from now on with any car they release.
Totally agree. If Hummer EV has issues, this could really derail the image of the company set them back into like the 70s or 80s.
Game over. Right. Worse than doing a deal with Nikola and saying hydrogen's the future. And it was game over then.
That was GM that did that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm sorry.
I mean, yeah. All right. So yeah, it's just a mess, and I really feel bad for GM because, you know, they were one of the first companies to have, you know, plug-in vehicles. They had brought out the Chevy Volt, and then, you know, it's not a great car. Compared to what we have now, the Chevy Bolt might not be, you know, it doesn't have a super fast charging like some cars do, but they've made it for years.
It's still a good car for some uses. Yeah, I mean, a lot of municipalities use them. It's an American electric car that. You know, some cities will only buy American EVs, so that limits your potential. And I think it's the cheapest American EV that we have. It's like, you know, Leaf is obviously not American, but we see a lot of these in use.
Right.
And so like the Bolt works really well for our market for a lot of use cases. It's a pretty good onboard charger. Like, they drive really nice. I like the Bolt. I just don't think it's technically impressive, but I would highly recommend it to like fleet use sales, et cetera. And this really hurt GM. Massively. Well, I pulled up in a Honda E into when I was in Munich to like a restaurant, like one of these fast food places. And the guy's like, oh, park that away. It might catch on fire. I was like, ha. And he's like, no, I'm serious. Like, I'm actually afraid with this car. I mean, you heard they're all catching on fire. I'm like, oh, wow, this is terrible.
It's crazy. Yeah. I might buy a Bolt EV at some point because that's, you know, in my budget, or as close as anything is in my budget to my budget.
It'd be a good upgrade from the Spark. You could actually take it on big road trips and do stuff like this.
I mean, I don't know if it drives as good. I really love my Spark, man.
It won't be as fun.
I was in it yesterday. I was just thinking, feeling, you know, after driving the ID4, you know, because that was really nice to drive. I liked it. But it's a little more relaxed, you know. The Spark is sporty. Yeah, even though it's front-wheel drive, it's like pretty tight, and you know, it's fun. Yeah. Anyway, I won't go on about my Spark, but just to say that Chevy Bolt EV is like experiencing all these difficulties, but you know, I'm still confident that, you know, GM can get it together, and I would buy one. I would put it in my garage, and I'm not worried. Gas cars burn all the time. Cars burn all the time. It'd be great if there's not like an inherent battery, you know, problem, defect that could increase my chances. So I'm glad that they're taking care of it, but I do expect it to be taken care of because their whole future depends on having a car that doesn't have battery defects. So, okay. Let's move on real quick. And one more. Oh, yeah, we're up there with time anyway, but I don't know if we want to talk about this, but a BMW executive said the automaker is capping the range, EV range, at 600 kilometers. That's 373 miles. Instead of going up, you know, we're seeing like Teslas and Lucids.
Yeah,
and
the range wars, that's the era for the next, I would say, 3 years, and then this will be over. So I think BMW, for the first time, is actually approaching this with a level head. I don't think capping the EV range is the right thing, but I think just making the best product they can, you know, factoring in battery cost and vehicle efficiency, as long as it charges well and we get more charging infrastructure, which I don't know if it's really happening or not as quickly as I would like, then, you know, who needs the range at that point? Why haul around all those extra batteries?
No, there's no point. And this was the head of the I4 program who said it to Australian media, but still someone very senior who is saying, what BMW is not chasing range. Like, we think this is 600 kilometers. He didn't use the word cap.
Okay.
I don't think. There might be a quote in the article. Well, wait, I might be proven wrong.
So, but Once they reach that plateau, that means they can start increasing lightness, which means better handling and more range. You know, with lighter cars, just some better dynamics. You know,
yeah, well, just use case. Just like, why can't, I don't know, the EV world still has an issue with use case. Like, we started off talking about the Citroën Ami, who I've, in the comments, I see someone says it's Ami, as in the French mon ami. That makes sense. Ami. Okay. I'll still call it Ami just to wind people up.
But, yeah. I think English blokes will call it Ami.
Right. So, you know, we started off about that, which is a car about use case. Now, why not make a BMW that does 1,000 kilometers of range and have a nice big 7 Series equivalent that people can, you know, when the golf club or whatever, they're all like, oh, look at my lovely car, goes very far, lovely. And then have a car that does 100 miles because it's a use case. Like,
wait, is that your version of a British golf?
Yeah. Yeah,
because
that's
us, when we do the golf club, you know, impression, we do you. We sound you. Yeah, no, but you have someone else.
Yeah, no, I've got a different guy in my head when I do the golf club guy. Right, so... But so we just can't get past use case for some reason. Like, why do all EVs have to be chasing 0-60 range, fast charging? Like, just can we get over it now? But I think, as Kyle says, 3 years away, we'll go past this kind of, you know, willy waving, here's how far my car goes, and then we'll be into sensible territory.
We do have a thing on, if you're interested in acceleration, a lot of people aren't. I saw a few comments. We do have like a listing of different EVs available now, and like their different speeds, they're ranked by their 0-60 speed or something.
But it's ranked by manufacturer claimed 0-60, and it's ranked by EPA range, both of which we know can be varying in the real world.
Sure.
What we should do, if we're smart, we should rank it by our own range tests that we do.
We don't really do a 0-60 test, but maybe we should do it like a...
On every car I test for my own stuff, and I have a data sheet somewhere because I have the GPS loggers and things. It's hard to do it at elevation where I live, though, because the combustion cars really suffer. It's not, you know, totally accurate because we just have less air density.
Do you use
and EVs are better. Yeah, I have a Draggy, we have V-Box, we have a couple different ones.
Okay. Okay, so between those, you can get an accurate reading. I was curious, because in the case of like the VW ID4, a lot of the press materials were saying all-wheel drive, the 0-60 was 5.47 seconds, but then at the presentation, 5.4 seconds. I don't know which is the...
Yeah, but that's probably 0-100 versus 0-60. 100K versus 60 miles per hour could be. I mean, that's a big time difference for 2.5 miles an hour or whatever it is. Right. But this is possible. At the end of the day, the real numbers on paper, my goal maybe over the next couple of years is to maybe try and open a couple minds to like You don't drive numbers on paper. We drive experiences. We drive feeling. We drive the intangibles. When you turn the wheel in a Taycan with rear steering, it is almost a magical experience because the car does things that most people have never experienced before. But when you turn the wheel in a Model S, which is technically faster, it's got a different steering wheel. I don't know. It's just different. Right. So it's what experiences would you like? And I think we're going to stop focusing on the real numbers. Of course, we'll do our range testing. They do well for us. We're known for it. And I think truly we still do the only standardized highway range test in the US that is repeatable and somewhat accurate. Of course, it's never fully scientific, but I haven't seen any other outlet doing what we're doing.
Right. All right. So
I feel like we've been almost giddy without the stabilizing influence of Tom. Tom's like the sun sometimes. He's such a, you know, stable, like everything else kind of tends to rotate around. And without Tom, I feel like today I've been, you know, more zesty than usual.
More zesty. I like this word. That's great.
No. So Tom needs to come back.
Yeah, he'll be back next week, and he'll be telling us all about the Rivian. I think he'll be able to tell us about it back then, or maybe, yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Maybe we'll do a special episode if it doesn't line up. We should do with Tom, like a midweek 30-minute thing where we just talk about his Rivian experience.
Well, I got to go to drive something to myself next week, and I'm not going to be able to do a whole lot of prep for the show, so it might be all Tom next week talking
about. That's cool.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So, but that brings us to the end of our show today.
Wait, Dominic, you and I will be together in a week, won't we?
Are you going to Irvine, California?
Mazda?
The thing?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. We'll be together. We'll do the show together.
Oh, that's awesome, man.
Do that.
Okay. But I have to come. I'll be back by then for the show Friday.
Oh, I honestly haven't even looked at my schedule yet.
It's like I fly out of there Thursday. I get back here at like midnight on Thursday night.
Well, we'll figure it out. We'll see. But anyway, it might be possible to do something together.
Yeah, we'll do something. Well, yeah, we'll be there at the same time. And there's no fancy thing. We're getting box lunches, so we'll have more time to hang out.
Good. I hate the fancy thing. Automakers, stop flying first class and let me buy my own plane tickets sometimes. And I usually try and turn it down. Like, I try to book my own plane tickets. Right. I just think this whole trend of automakers really trying to go out of their way to make journalists have the best experience that, just give the car at the office. Like, literally, just bring it to my house. That's all I want.
I do like the dinners besides because we get to talk to, like last time at the VW thing, I got to talk to Dustin for like an hour or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Really, the people are the best because you don't only get the what. When you read a press release, you get the what is the car. But when you talk to the people, you get the why and the how. And this opens up new explanations to the car.
And I also like being able to hear the other journalists in attendance ask questions because they come up with angles that I hadn't thought of. You know, there's a lot of experience at these tables and the ideas are passing back and forth. And I think it's a lot of value there. So there's that. Anyway, so that brings us to the end of our show today. Right? Okay. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. And if you're watching us on YouTube, a rating on... Right. I can never say this properly. So yeah, if you're watching this on YouTube, give us a thumbs up or a rating if you're listening on another platform. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can find Tom Malogny at Tomalog, that's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
When it comes to showing appreciation, the gift you choose says everything. Minky Couture luxury blankets make the perfect statement. Soft, stylish, and unforgettable. Whether you're thanking a client, rewarding an employee, or celebrating a milestone, nothing delivers warmth and gratitude like a Minky blanket. With custom options and elegant packaging, your gift will stand out and be remembered long after the moment has passed. Make your corporate gifting extraordinary. With Minky Couture, luxury you can feel. Visit minkycouture.com to get started.